I suppose by Grace's definition, I would be a nature person. I spend as much time in nature as I can, and this year we are living right on Lake Michigan, at least for the winter, and being able to watch the changing seasons in Lake Michigan shores has been such a treat. I've never grown up. I grew up on the other side of Michigan, so the west side of Michigan is new to me, but seeing something all the time lets you see how it looks in changing minute ways. In the last week or two, we've seen Lake Michigan bring about some big changes as all the ice from the winter finally thawed and melted away. The beaches are changing. And on a walk this over the last week, my wife and I, Lisa and I, were out walking, and I'm always looking for odd things, little pebbles or pieces of driftwood. Usually if I walk, I'll find at least one thing or two things to bring back with me to my growing collection. Well, for whatever reason, there was a lot of things on the shores of Lake Michigan this past week, including a lot of dead seagulls and dead fish, which was not as cool. But the pieces of driftwood, I was picking up a large amount. So normally I can fit a piece or two into my pockets. My wife, being a good sport, played along with me as we walked. And Teresa, I don't know if you want to hand out, pass around a few of these. I kind of like bringing things in and passing around. It reminds me of school with only a few of them. You can just grab a few, I think. This is what I almost collected on one trip, though. So you can imagine, I kind of had stuff going like this and out of my pockets and all, because every piece of wood I found was so beautiful to me. I don't know what you think of when you see driftwood. What do you see? Now, I'm going to need all these back, by the way. I want to keep these. Lake Michigan gave them to me. I'm sharing them with you, but I'm going to keep them. But what do you think of when you see this? I mean, like, I'm reminded that these pieces of wood are like bones. They're remains. And in the same way that we dig up old burial sites and we remember, oh, a human once walked or lived here. I see these pieces of wood, and I'm like, this was a living creature, a living, breathing creature. Because, of course, we know that trees breathe. They breathe in and out. They photosynthesize. They are as much a part of this dynamic planet that we live on as anything else. And I was kind of torn on how we were going to tie these things in, because I was wanting to move into a new series that we're going to be starting next week now called Sacred Earth, but the Gaia hypothesis was something I was already wanting to talk about in that series, but I thought that it fits so well that it's kind of like a beautiful bookend between this Feminine Wisdom series that we're just coming out of and the Sacred Earth, because I really do believe that our understanding of the planet that we are on needs to be guided more by our feminine archetypes and our cultivating, nurturing, reciprocal relationships that we see in nature than the dominator model that many of us have grown up with. When I see these pieces of driftwood, to me, I see this, as strange as it sounds, like the planet talking back to me. I am witnessing part of the life cycle of this planet, something that's been happening for thousands and thousands of years. And one day, yes, I too am going to leave my own bones behind. I'm hoping when I do that I can do it in a way that's a little less traditional, because I tend to kind of defy tradition. And I've looked into the composting and the tree things. Yeah, I would love to come back as a tree. I like the idea of our connection, though, with nature. But many of us have grown up in systems, economic systems, cultural systems, even spiritual systems, They have framed the earth as a backdrop, as a resource, as something to extract things from to benefit us. We see ourselves as the preeminent members on this floating rock in space, and we see this planet as something that we can take from, something that we live on and not with. Last week, we talked about this concept that was introduced from Ryan Eisler's book, The Chalice and the Blade. And I want to recap a little bit about that because this ties in with these ideas. Most of the systems that we have grown up with and experience come out of what Ryan Eisler calls a dominator model of organization in this world, contrasted with what she calls a partnership model, the blade and the chalice. The blade represents a dominator culture, sharp and rigid and forceful, and it represents a way that so many of us grew up interacting with the world and the resources that we share. The chalice represents partnership, a worldview built on cooperation, on mutual thriving, or what Robin Wall Kimmerer calls the shared flourishing. All flourishing, she says, is mutual. When we move through this world with a sense that we're connected to something that's living and dynamic, not that we're on it, but with it, we come from the womb of the earth. We live briefly and will return back to the earth. And it brings us to this week, because our planet is very much like this chalice, this womb picture, this organizational structure of things that have come together in such a unique way to foster life and all of its fascinating diversity. And we're on this planet. She's something to be honored, to be held, to be learned from. The earth doesn't just sustain life. She is life. We are part of her, not apart from her. And when we live our lives apart from something, we begin to move in an us and them, an other relationship. And we treat the earth as a mindless energy source that can be endlessly extracted from. And yet, as we found out last week, the dominator styles of society are a relatively recent form of social organization. We're now finding that out by archaeological records. If you've read Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari, another good follow-up book, The Dawn of Everything, we're finding now that for 20 times as long as recorded history, that partnership models of organization and social structure were the norm, not the dominator. And that it's when we live our lives in connection with something that we're a part of and not apart from, we can see that she is life itself. So some of these ideas of this Gaia hypothesis came from James Lovelock. And in the 1960s, he wrote a book about it, but he was coming at this idea from a relatively scientific standpoint, even though in the realms of science and nature, he's relatively viewed in kind of a woo-woo lens. And if you bring up the word Gaia in conversations, people will ask you what kind of desert retreat you just came back from and why are you using that kind of language? Because we don't often talk in those kind of intimate terms about our planet. Maybe the most intimate we can use would be Mother Earth. And even that seems kind of childlike, doesn't it? It's the way children talk, and we read that kind of language in children's books. Do we treat her like a mother, like a nurturing mother? What about Gaia, this idea of this planet that we are on, both sustaining life and being the source of life? So in the 60s, James Lovelock actually worked with NASA to help to find life on Mars. He was a prominent scientist, but while studying the Earth's atmosphere, he noticed something strange. He noticed that our planet seemed to behave not like a dead rock in space, but like a living system. It adjusted, it corrected, it responded. This is what he said. Gaia, as I see her, is no doting mother intolerant of misdemeanors. Nor is she some fragile and delicate damsel in distress damsel in danger from brutal mankind. She is stern and tough, always keeping the world warm and comfortable for those who obey the rules, but ruthless in her destruction of those who transgress. Her unconscious goal is a planet fit to sustain life. If humans stand in the way of this, we shall be eliminated with as little pity as would be shown by the microbrain of an intercontinental ballistic nuclear missile in full flight to its target. Now, he wrote this in the nuclear age where that language conjured up a picture of fear, but I think the sense that he's talking about here is that Earth is both something that is alive and vibrant and the source and the womb of life, and we are like the tiniest little bacteria in our gut. We're a tiny, tiny component on this planet that has been around for billions of years. And just like a collection of enough bacteria in your gut, it can make you sick. And we're seeing the early signs now of a planet in distress, a planet that is sick. Along with microbiologist Lynn Maroulis, James Lovelock developed this idea that he called the Gaia hypothesis, where that the Earth functions like a complex living organism. Gaia, borrowed from the ancient Greek mythology, where Gaia was this primordial earth goddess. She wasn't a deity of the land, she was the land, the mother of all life, the womb of all creation. As Alan Watts talks about, and we talked about in our first series of this year, we come from the earth. If we would call ourselves alive, if we would call ourselves conscious, where did that life, where did that consciousness come from? If it arose from anywhere, it arose from the womb of this earth. All of the consciousness, all of the diversity that we see on this planet emerged from the planet. We were talking this morning in pre-talk about, is the earth alive? How do you talk about it? Is our planet the only beacon of light and life in a cold, dead universe? Even if we could extract ourselves and find another planet suitable for life, where did that life come from to begin with? This planet, as amazing as it is, creates and sustains life, the womb from which everything else emerged. Alan says, we don't come into this world, we come out of it as leaves from a tree, as the ocean waves, the universe peoples. Every individual is an expression of the whole realm of nature, a unique action of the total universe. So by that explanation, both Grace and all of you are nature people. We're nature people because we come from nature. We're a part of nature. And just like that little bacteria in our gut, if you pull that bacteria out and separate it from us, and if that bacteria were to achieve autonomy and independence, it would very quickly find that it does not have what it needs to sustain life because it is a part of a whole system of complex life. and so are we. And we forget that. And our dominator model of organization and social structure causes us to think that we are separate from, that we are dynamic individuals capable of bringing about our own changes in this world. And we've forgotten what we have known for thousands of years, that we are more connected together than we are apart. Lovelock says, when we burn fossil fuels for energy, we are, in qualitative terms, doing nothing wrong, more wrong than burning wood. Our wrongdoing, if that is even an appropriate term, and we kind of discussed in pre-talk about the idea of sinning against our planet or wrongdoing against our planet, and we kind of came to this idea that what we do to the planet is doing it to ourselves. But Lovelock says, our wrongdoing, if that is an appropriate term, is taking energy from Gaia hundreds of times faster than it is naturally made available. We are sinning in a quantitative, not a qualitative way. We've forgotten principles of reciprocity. We've forgotten that we come from this earth, and our earth showers us with sunsets and water and oxygen and life. And we just fly through it without even forgetting. We walk past pieces of wood, the bones of our brothers and sisters, of our fellow plants and animals, of our other pieces of intelligent life on this planet, and we neglect to recognize that we're connected to them too. That their well-being brings about our well-being. And sure, you'll get laughed at if you talk about this in the right circles. This sounds incredibly naive to think that simply being more in touch with the planet is going to fix this problem that we're in. And yes, I will admit that on my dark and cynical days, it can be very, very difficult to motivate enough energy to want to do something and not have it feel like spitting into the wind. Even the smallest of actions feels so incredibly insufficient in our world today. We're moving towards this nurturing relationship. This is what we're trying to cultivate. This is what we're trying to grow. The story that we and many of us have been told in growing up, and especially in our religious upbringing, is a dominator model, especially when it comes to our planet. Genesis 1:28, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth. And do you know what that word was? Fill the earth and what? Subdue it. So many of us heard that in Sunday school so long ago that word is still in our head. That word in the Hebrew, kavash, means to put your foot on the neck of a conquered enemy. I don't know about you, but I don't want to have that kind of a relationship with the planet. And I think it's the height of arrogance to even think we can subdue this planet, have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air. This dominator model runs deep, and the blade has been given to us as the answer for centuries, but for many thousands of years before that, we recognize that the earth is like a womb. She gives birth and sustains life, and she seeks a balance. Any of you who are moms know that the happiest mom in the world is one where that house is in balance. And maybe that comes in brief moments, but when life is in balance, when there is that symbiotic relationship between all of the things, it's what we're striving for. Not that this is perfect, but we are moving ourselves in a way where we can see this world not as something to subdue, but as something to live with. And this subjugation model has also affected the way that we even talk about masculinity in our world today. We were having conversations yesterday about Andrew Tate, and if you're familiar with him and you know what he brings in his idea of how men and women should function together, and the fact that there are millions of young men who look up to and aspire to be that way, we see the end result of a domination model. Because if we can subdue the earth, if we can conquer it and dominate it, we can subdue our women, subdue our children, subdue our country. This dominator model not only hasn't served us, it has pitted us against ourselves, and it's pitted us against the world that is sustaining us. Rather than trying to dominate the plants, maybe, as Robin Wall Kimmerer says, in Native American languages, the language or the word for plant means, or it's translated to, those who take care of us. Maybe we can move into that relationship with our planet and our world. I'm going to close with this paragraph, this thought here from Braiding Sweetgrass, because in a world where it's overwhelming to see the damage that's being done, it can be easy to throw up our hands. And it can be also easy for those of you who are like me, who are solution-oriented, who are action-oriented people, it can be easy to think that fixing the earth is as simple as a list of things that I can do: drive less, eat more natural, local, all these things. We can find ourselves overwhelmed with this, but what I'm trying to get us to do today is to move us back into a right relationship with Gaia, not as a problem to be solved, not as something to be subdued or conquered, but as the source of life that sustains us, as something to work with, to recognize that we are part of a living earth. Robin Wall Kimmerer says, even a wounded world is feeding us. Even a wounded world holds us, giving us moments of wonder and joy. I choose joy over despair. Not because I have my head in the sand, but because joy is what the earth gives me daily, and I must return the gift. I hope that this week, this month, as we move about in this world, on this planet, that we pause for brief moments and to see ourselves as part of this connected whole. To move past our natural tendency to label us and everything else. I'm a human. That is a tree, that is the water, and that is the beach. And recognize that when we pull out and out and out, we only see this planet, this Gaia that sustains us, this life-giving womb of creation. May we return back to a right relationship with her. May we express the gratitude and the appreciation. May we learn to live in a reciprocal relationship with our planet that sustains us and has sustained us and will continue to sustain life on this planet. Thank you. Namaste.